Blog Talk Radio.
Well, your dadgum government, your sorry so-and-sos, you got your damn hands in every pocket of my clothes. Well, your dadgum, dadgum, dadgum government, Oh, don't you know, don't you love them sometimes? Well, your dadgum government, you better pay attention. You're setting up there like a fool's convention. Will you dadgum, dadgum, dadgum government? Oh, don't you know? Oh, don't you love them sometimes?
Well, welcome to Handling the Truth. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host tonight, the Rebel Madman, Mike Gaddy. And we got a great show lined up for you tonight, and we're going to open this show right, as we always do, with a prayer. Please join me. Our Father in heaven, we're just blessed in so many ways, and we recognize that this life's not supposed to be fair or easy. And we know that you created it and that it's all under your control, and you are the one that sustains us. And you are the only one that can sustain us eternally. We invite your spirit to be with us tonight, to control our words and our actions. And we just pray that we are in your desire, and that we can catch the wave that you are creating, because we know that if we try to do it on our own, we'll beat our heads against the wall. We need you in our lives. We need you here at Handling the Truth. And we need you to heal our land, Father. We pray all of this in the name of your Son, our Savior, Yahshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ. Amen. Well, Mike, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Terry. I hope you are.
I couldn't be a whole lot better. I could be about 20 years younger, I guess. Maybe that'd be better. I don't know.
I don't think that would help much.
I don't think so either, really. Honestly, I don't think I'd want to go back at this point, man. I'm just looking at my grandchildren and wondering how in the world they're going to survive in this world as crazy it is today. Well, we've got a great guest online. Thanks to you, Mike, lining up our guest. And I'm just going to turn the floor over to you and let you introduce him.
Well, thanks, Terry. This young man that's with us tonight, I met him, probably well over 10 years ago when I first met him. And then about 2012, he decided that he was going to run for county commissioner in Montezuma County, Colorado. And I talked with him for a while. We met on several occasions, and I really liked what he said. I liked where he was coming from and what he wanted to do. And he came to a couple of my constitution classes as well, and he decided that he was going to run as an independent. He was not going to be a Democrat. He was not going to be a Republican, and that would just made me happier than a pig in the mud. And so he ran as an independent when everybody said you couldn't do it, and he not only was successful, but he has had an 8-year term. He's term limited out this time, and he has done a fantastic job for the people of the county, Montezuma County, that he represents. And it's a pleasure to have you tonight, Larry. Don, thanks for coming on with us, buddy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gaddy, and thank you, Mr. Dodd, for inviting me on tonight.
Well, tell us a little bit about your adventure of your 8-year tenure. And, you know, we mentioned a little earlier, you were talking about the things you were going to miss. You weren't going to be tired of being chewed out, but you can't represent that many people and not and please everybody. And if you pleased everybody, you wasn't doing something right, I promise you. So tell us a little bit about that 8-year adventure, please.
Well, it all started with help with a bunch of community members, and I couldn't have done it alone. That's how the world goes around. and the community came together, and I was successful in getting elected. After I got elected, the first thing that they do for a newly elected commissioner in the state of Colorado, and I believe that was probably be the same as the rest of the states, is they send you to the metropolitan area of Denver to try to, what I call, brainwash you into believing that you work for the state of Colorado and that you don't work for the people that elected you. One of my sayings has always been that they say, well, you are an arm of the state. And I always say the state didn't elect me. It was the people that elected me, and that's who my boss is. After, when I went up to the orientation, they send you to a meeting that they call a winter conference. And I found out there that one of the committees that is one of the most, wouldn't say powerful, but one of the committees that gets the most things done is the Public Lands Committee. And so being a newly elected official, actually I wasn't even elected yet, I put my name in the hat to be the vice chair of Public Lands because it sent me the wrong form. I was just wanting to get on the traveling committee. As soon as I did that, I started getting phone calls of who are you and why are you running for vice chair of a committee that usually a newly elected commissioner never gets voted on because it's one county, one vote, 64 counties in the state of Colorado, one county, one vote. As we proceeded, I got on the airplane to fly to Denver for where the vote was going to be take place. I get a text saying that you have 5 minutes for your speech, which I didn't know I was even supposed to give a speech. So I called my wife, and in 45 minutes when I got to Denver, she had a speech for me on my phone. I ran against a savvy politician from Pickens County, which was Colorado, and they were successful. She gave her speech. I gave my speech. She beat me. But there was still 5 positions on that traveling committee left. And so 11 commissioners vying for those 6 seats or 5 seats. And one of the commissioners said in the room said, well, can that Sukla, which my name is Sukla, but they couldn't pronounce it right, can he run for one of those 5 seats? And because I was one of the only ones, I was the only one that was able to give a speech, I was elected to that. And then I became the chair of Public Lands, and then I was the vice chair of Public Lands of NACO, which is the association for all the counties throughout the United States. And that's where they sent me to Washington 7 times and where I got to see how the workings are in Washington, D.C., and meet people that try to make a difference there. I could talk for an hour of all the experiences. I would say one of the one things that stands out to me as a county commissioner is you are granted authorities, and these authorities are the authorities that are the people's authorities. And what I found out as a county commissioner is somebody walks through that door every week, and they try to relieve you of that authority. And it's not my authority to give away. It's the authority of the people. And so I've been an advocate of never giving away any of those authorities. If you gave away all those authorities, then you wouldn't need county commissioners. So I would say that would be one thing that really stands out to me.
Well, very well said. And I must remind you, at some point I intend to blackmail you because I have a picture of you standing next to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I've stood by several of them, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I always respected about you, Larry Don, was the fact that the people of the county came first to you. And because of that, here's a question. I'm sure everyone wants to talk about this. We feel that throughout this country, from county, city, state, and especially on the federal level, these authorities have been vastly, been involved in overreach, especially with this COVID thing. Would you tell me how you guys with the county commissioners, how you dealt with that in Montezuma County, please?
In Montezuma County, we believe in personal responsibility. We believe that government has no right to tell people how they live. So we have governed since March that way. I got to be honest with you. When that first came out, for the first two or three weeks, we all went to our homes and stayed in there like the big government told us to do so. And then as things drug along, we realized that something wasn't quite right here. And so we resumed our meetings. We did meetings over Zoom, and I can tell you this, most of the country is doing meetings over Zoom, and Zoom is a waste of time. If you cannot react with people in person, you have a hard time making decisions and actions. So almost all actions, in my opinion, are being delayed because of the Zoom meetings. We don't wear masks at our county commissioner meetings. We don't require, if somebody wants to wear a mask, they're more than welcome. If one of our county employees, we have 227 of them, if they want to wear a mask, they're more than welcome, but they're not required. We have did things differently here. We had one of the only fairs in the state of Colorado that was normal, and it was a record for the kids. We have been running our races for our stock car races and sprinters. When we first opened up, we had racers coming all the way from Arkansas and Oregon. We have had our stands packed. We had no COVID outbreaks with nobody wearing masks at our county fair and being packed. We had no outbreaks from our stock car races all summer. And as county commissioners, we have kids, and we realize that when fall comes, that virus people are inside more, and that viruses and flus increase. And we've been stating that we felt that there might be more cases since April. You could look back on our YouTube videos. You're not going to hear that from our health department or in doctor for the health department, but we're the ones that have been stating that, and then it came to pass, unfortunately.
Well, I remember one thing that sticks in my mind, Larry Don, was, and I read about it in the paper, was you had a death in the park, I believe, and it was alcohol poisoning, and the state changed the determination of death to COVID. Is that correct, what I read in the paper, or was that incorrect?
So that was correct, and the kudos go to our county commissioner. The gentleman that died in the park had five times the lethal dose of alcohol in his system. They changed it to COVID, and he fought and fought that. That made it all the way to Fox News, and they redid their numbers, and it knocked off 300, I believe, in some numbers of 1,100. It took from 1,100 to 8-something. Because we weren't the only county that had experienced that with the numbers. We also pushed them, which was very interesting, because there was five people in the park, and we had our health officials wanting us to capture those five people, hold them against their will, and build a $300,000 hospital for all the cases that we were to get out at our fairgrounds. And the county commissioner said no, everything worked out, and we didn't waste $300,000 of taxpayer money.
Well, I applaud you for that. I, you know, as much as I could keep up with it from a distance, I've been trying to monitor how things are going, and then several of my friends back there, we maintain a phone conversation from time to time, and I know you and I both know Raymond Boyd, and I talk with him quite often, and he has been most laudatory about the way that you folks have handled, you folks meaning you commissioners, the way you have handled this whole fiasco when the rest of the country seemed to be going crazy.
I would say that statement's correct. We took a route that we thought that that we believe is the right route to take, and that is that it's not our right as government officials to tell people how to live their lives. We want them to stay safe and responsible, but that's their personal responsibility to do so.
Well, I commend you for that. That is a great approach, and I'm sure that the people there thank you, especially the part about the fair and the stock car races and trying to keep life as normal as possible in that what I think we'd have to call that a rural county in Colorado, wouldn't we?
Yes, we would. 28,000 people.
Yeah. So, Terry, you got any questions of Larry Don?
Oh, I got all kinds of questions for Larry Don.
Well, don't sit on them.
I want to hear a little bit more because I know that you've probably caught an earful from the same people, but it's probably escalated since this thing, this plandemic, as I call it, occurred. There's got to be some pushback on you guys resisting all of the false science and stuff and keeping things open. I'd just kind of like to hear what the difference was for before and after on that.
So not as much the very first with us wearing the mask or not wearing the mask, but this second go around, I've had a death threat. The tune that they always sing over and over again, if the commissioners would just come out, if the commissioners would just wear a mask in their meeting, and if the commissioners would just tell everybody to wear a mask, magically everybody would put a mask on and wear it. And I got news for them. People have already made up their minds. People are either going to wear them or not, and the government official is not going to tell those people what to do, which they shouldn't. It's up to the individuals. So, yes, we get a lot of hate mail. They come at us a lot, but we're doing what we think is the right thing to do, and we're going to ride this pony all the way to the finish line. So we'll see what happens.
Well, if you haven't had any outbreak, that means you're not testing, because the tests are going to say you've got an outbreak, even if it's just cold or flu, because they're not testing for an isolated virus. They're testing for viral load in general, and that could be brought on just by common everyday colds. So the places that are having the outbreaks are having outbreaks because they're testing more, and there's a huge false positive. So what's been your policy? Have you had companies wanting to come in and do testing? And has there been a push? But where's the push come from to get more testing done?
So we actually do quite a bit of testing. We did it's just a rough estimate, because 8,000 and some tests of 28,000 people. And I believe right now we're sitting at over 900 active, and then the rest would be they've gotten better or we've had three deaths. The problem with the test is the numbers never reset. They just keep getting higher and higher, and everybody talks about, well, you have 900 cases. Well, what we did as commissioners, the health department at first, we said we want to know how many people recovered, and because they would just give one number. And that was a fight. That was a threat of termination if they did not give us those numbers. And at the very last minute, we finally got it to where they would start putting how many people had recovered from the virus. So my big problem is what is considered an outbreak is two people. Well, that's ridiculous, in my opinion. I've never seen the number two and the word outbreak go together unless it's two people on a desert island. And it hurts our businesses when two people come up with a positive test. It hurts them in the long run. And it's funny that they won't give you the information of how many people are in your hospital, because that's private. But yet they want to throw out a business name out there that two or more people have tested positive.
have you guys talked about going forward how to make this thing go away? Is there been any discussion about an exit strategy on this? I mean, the numbers indicate that more people have died of wearing masks in the past than died from the actual so-called epidemic because of the bacterial pneumonia that the masks cause. And I'm just I'm wondering if you guys have had any great ideas, if you will, about how to basically shut this down in your county so that you don't have to deal with it anymore.
Well, the only idea that's been talked about, and it's only four counties at this present time of 64, is for all of the counties, which you're not going to get them all because you have probably around 22 to 24 that are Democrat and the rest are Republican independent, and which is the majority of Colorado, for all of us to refuse the government, governor mandates. As long as everybody keeps going on with these government executive orders, I don't know how we're ever going to have an end to this mess.
Well, therein lies the next question. Did your county decide amongst the commissioners whether or not the governor really had the authority to come out with these edicts?
We have had that discussion, and we do not believe that the governor has the authority for these mandates.
I'm looking at a map right now that shows the red counties and blue counties. Looks like the majority of the counties are red. And by that, I mean they had a majority of voters leaning Republican versus Democrat, which you're an independent and I respect that. And I wish I could be and still be effective in my local community because I'm about as independent as you are, maybe more. but I'm looking at this and I wonder why there's not more pushback from the red counties. The left-right debate's a smokescreen. I know that. We know the establishment's behind both of the major parties. But it just doesn't seem to be enough pushback from those that are supposedly on the right. What's your
experience
with that?
So I can tell you one thing that's going on right now, and you would know about Weld County, is they are talking about funding that the governor will not hand out funding to those counties that go against the mandates. So Weld County has some very money fiscally responsible commissioners, and they have a healthy reserve. Montezuma County has a very healthy reserve. So the threat of money would not affect us, but a lot of those red counties are not doing so well. Montezuma County, the reason that we are doing well is because we have CO2. We have one of the largest CO2 fields in the world. And so we get the taxes from that. What most people don't know is they charge a business 29% for their commercial house. I think it's down to 7.2% valuation. And all energy, oil, gas, is taxed at 87.7%. So that means that those energy companies they make money off of 12.5%. And then the government takes the rest of it. So every dollar that pumps out of the ground, the government is taking 87.7%.
Wow.
There's no other industry that I know of that is taxed that heavily.
Well, Mike, I've got a lot of questions, but I don't want to dominate this conversation. You know Larry Don better than I do, and you know the situation down there and what you might want to bring out. So,
well, I've just been it's been fantastic to listen to what Larry Don is saying and how they have stood up for the people and stood up for what's right and standing against the governor's ridiculous mandates. I applaud you for that, Larry Don, and I know your other two commissioners as well. Pardon me, and I appreciate the job they have done. Kind of shifting gears a little bit, in your 8 years, what would you say has been your biggest challenge as a county commissioner?
The pace of government. That one's easy. The pace of government and the waste. So I'll give you an example. I can give you lots of examples, but when we remodeled our courthouse because of a law, a statute that you have to provide the courts some to, for the courts, the counties have to provide that. We had an architect tell us that we needed to do that, and it would cost, for a building, in my opinion, it was only worth $2 million, 67 years old, it would cost $4.7 million to do that. And when we got rid of the architect and we did it in-house, we did it for a little under $700,000. So I would say studies and meetings. So there's a saying that the more meetings you go to, the dumber you get. And some of this, there's a little bit of truth to that. I am on several committees, and you go to a meeting for 3 hours, and at the end of that 3 hours, there was no decision made or any action taken on how to move forward. So my biggest frustration is lack of action and the pace of which action takes place.
Okay, well, that's understood. Let me follow up with that. If you could change the system from the outside, what would you do to change the system that you operated under for 8 years?
Kind of a hard question. There's a lot of fluff in government. I would change. You don't need two people having the same. You don't need a secretary for a secretary. You don't need duplicate positions, and That's a tough question. If you could get rid of a lot of the fluff and you could make decisions quicker, you could get a lot more done that for the good of the people.
Well, I'm going to jump on to a tougher question here for you, and I know what the battle was like when I was there. What is the pushback? What is the problem that you, or are you continuing to see the same problem with the overreach of the federal government through BLM and the Forest Service?
Yes, we continue to see that. To give you an example, we had a bike trail expansion here, and it took 7 years. And that bike trail, after we finally got the BLM on board, because the change of administrations, which was a 7-year battle as a commissioner. Then we have something in Colorado, which is called SHPO, and that is the people over archaeological sites. And they just refuse to let us put that trail in. And to give you an example, in Rio Blanco County, the same organization, which they're not elected, but they seem to have all the power in the world, would not let Rio Blanco County take down a power line that was laid over to put a new one in because it was over 50 years old and had status for that historical designation, which was absolutely ridiculous because they were worried about people getting tangled up in the old wire. They were worried about wildlife. One of the main things is government entities that are not elected, people that are not elected, that have authority, well, supposedly think they have authority over elected officials. Well, the thing about elected officials is when you do something wrong, then you are held accountable by the people, or you're supposed to be. These organizations have no accountability, no way to rein them in when they are overreaching. And if there was one thing I could change on the federal level, it would be that there has got to be some sort of accountability over these federal employees.
Well, you have the unique position. I guess there's several, but you have the unique position of being a rural county with a national park within your county. What kind of challenges has that presented from your commissioner point of view?
I'll give you an interesting story. We have Mesa Verde National Park in our county. And when the government shut down 2 years ago, our park superintendent wouldn't shut the park down because they didn't have funding to plow the snow to go up to the park. And they had, I believe, 11 to 13 people that lived up there year-round. And through connections that I had made over the 8 years, I called somebody in the Department of Interior that was under the Secretary of Interior by three, and they told me that that park superintendent will be calling you within an hour and let the county, because we made an offer. We said, we'll plow the road for you. The county will plow the road for you. That's what we do. And in 30 minutes, he called, and the county plowed the road. We had tourists from Australia and all over the place coming up to a locked gate, had no idea that the park was closed, and flew halfway around the world to see that park. So
well, that is
those are
the
kind of challenges. Yes.
Yeah, that is a challenge. But, let's play equal, tit for tat here. What's the advantages of having a national park within your county?
I would say increased tourism. However, our county is funded, I wouldn't say solely, but the vast majority of our funding is through taxes, property taxes. We are luckily here in this county, and we don't have a sales tax, so we don't benefit from that much. The county does in itself from tourists. So the only benefit would be that I would see, or one of the benefits would be that if somebody was to come and look at the park and decide that they like where we live, and then they would build or buy a home, and then we would get the taxes off of that home or business.
Okay, now I'm going to delve into another part here. Colorado, with Amendment 64, has legalized recreational and medicinal marijuana. Tell me about the challenges that you have experienced with that over the 8 years.
So being a resident here all my life, the county has a moratorium, the city of Cortez and the other two municipalities have marijuana stores. And so they benefit from the sales tax on it, which I said we don't have a sales tax. Our problem is it has brought people to our county solely because of we border Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah, and it has brought people here that don't have a job, that are homeless, and it's created, for giving you an example, our county, I don't know what the figure is, but a couple of months ago, it was $700,000 a month in food stamps. That's one county out of 64. And talking with other commissioners throughout the state of Colorado, they have got the same high numbers as we do. So I don't know how it's sustainable, but we're having a problem with people that are homeless here because of that Amendment 64.
Okay.
And crime.
Crime? You've seen an increase in crime with that?
We've seen an increase of crime, yes. More theft,
well,
crime, I would say, than anything.
Okay. The county has the moratorium, but the cities have the sales. Are they using any of the tax revenue from that to offset the problems that are occurring because of it?
And I would say no, they are not. I'm sure that they give to the bridge shelter, and I'm sure, I don't know exactly, we'd have to look at their budget, but I would say for the amount of disruption that they're not paying their fair share.
Well, you talk to commissioners all over the state. Is that the problem that you talked about there? Is that you appear to be statewide as well?
I'm going to have to say that I don't know for a fact that that is. I would assume. I do know that some counties, I am friends with commissioners that have allowed it in their county, and they've thrown a $5 tax on each plant to create revenue, and they're generating a lot of revenue. Myself, personally, as a commissioner, I believe you can do whatever you want in your home, and it's none of my business, as long as you don't affect your neighbors or anybody else. And so our county, as I said, is doing well financially, so we don't see a need to lift the moratorium. But
it's very simple. Do you think, and you mentioned it before, do you think the proximity of three states being so close to Montezuma County, and basically you almost border on all three states, don't you, the county?
Yes, we do.
Okay,
we
so
do.
You border
we're four corners.
So you border all three states. Do you think that increases the number of people that you just mentioned that come to Montezuma County?
I would say 100-fold, because what they do is they can buy a certain amount. And so they come to our town because we're the first one to come to, and they buy it. And then they make a loop. Then they buy at each store the minimum amount. Then they go on to the next county, and they buy the minimal amount from each store. And then they go back to those states where it's not legal, and then they sell it for a lot more money.
Okay, one other issue, Larry Don, that I wonder about, that, you know, the people who are listening are not familiar with all of these factors. How does the fact that your county borders on two Indian reservations, how does that affect your county?
And well, it affects our county in a lot of ways, but do you have a more specific question?
Let's go with economically. How would you say it affects your county economically?
Well, it affects they are 33% of our county, and that would be the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation. And there is a lot of good people that are with the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation that I've grown up with and are good friends. Their current chairman put some hardship on our county by trying to get us to going through the governor, because they're of the same political party, to force us to do the mandates when we disagreed with the mandates. And so that was a challenge in itself because he had the ear of the governor and we didn't. We try to partner with them as much as possible, and I believe that if they would open up the purse a little more, I believe that it would be a great partnership. So far, it's been very hard to break through that glass ceiling with the current administration of the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, but we work on it.
Well, while I'm on that point, let me hit on one more, and then let's see what Terry might have for you. And can't thank you enough for answering all these questions for us, Larry Don. I appreciate it. You have a casino in your county. Would you tell us how that affects from your position as a county commissioner, how did you see that as a plus or a minus?
So the casino, I guess, I would say the minus would be that the majority of the people in that casino are Native Americans, and a lot of them don't have the money, in my opinion, that they're losing there. We do have a contract with the sheriff department where we provide law enforcement. I think the contract is from $80,000 to $100,000 a year, and so we have two deputies down there with that. They also have a bus that does pick up people in the nearest municipality, which is the city of Cortez, and buses them back and forth. And so tourists, I guess, they do find entertainment down there and spend money down there.
Okay. Terry, do you have any questions?
I was kind of wanting to shift gears a little bit back to the inner workings of the county government.
Sure.
You know, here in Parker, we've got a little over probably twice the population in our town as you have in your county. So, what
okay.
used to be a small town feel, it's lost a lot of that small town feel. And what we've witnessed is very similar actions and growth practices in the town as you would expect in a county or a town that follows Agenda 2030 or Agenda 21 of the United Nations, and that is to urbanize, to push more people into smaller spaces. And the staff that we have here has a tendency to recommend anything and everything that is growth and high density. And the town council, and in your case, it's county commission, has a tendency to be advised by legislative council that if people comply with the ordinances, that they can't say no. Have you felt the pressure to not say no when you've had things come up that you felt may or may not be at the to the benefit of the people?
I would say yes. I would say that our legal counsel, our county attorney, has at times told us that, well, you're going to be in a lawsuit. You possibly could be in a lawsuit if you didn't say yes to whatever the proposal was. But we do have, I have an unwritten rule that is three things. If your sound doesn't bother your neighbor, if the lights don't bother your neighbor, or if dust or some kind of a smell, that we do approve the projects. I guess we are fortunate here is until COVID, things are changing, but until COVID, we weren't growing very fast because of our limits on jobs here. How long does it take for them to do an approval? I know in La Plata County, if you want to put a new business in, which is right next door to me, it takes 2 years. Where we're at here, it takes 3 months.
Well, it probably takes a little longer than 3 months here, but it's not 3 years. It's probably
I said three,
for
I'm
new
sorry,
business
two
to
years.
Come.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure to bring in businesses, and they have you ever encountered tax increment finance?
No.
It's a concept that where they basically can freeze the property value at what it was before development, and they can contribute to the cost of development and sell the bonds off of that to be paid back from the increase in the property taxes. And what it does is it diverts those funds away from special interest or special districts and schools, because they're no longer benefiting from the increase in the property value. And it has this tendency to breed cronyism.
So I have experienced that.
You haven't run into that?
So I have, but in a different way. I've experienced it with conservation easements. We have, I think, at the last count, around 44,000 acres in Montezuma County, which of conservation easements. And my problem with conservation easements is that you freeze the taxation for 99 years. And it is not fair. I'm a private property rights advocate, but it is not fair for one guy to have taxes that are half or 100 times less as we go through the years than the other person because they didn't put theirs in a conservation easement. And that's where my big problem with conservation easements are, is locking in that tax rate. It should be one for all and all for one.
Well, since you've gone that direction with that conversation, the bill that just passed, which basically negated the Gallagher Amendment, how is that going to impact your county?
Higher taxes. higher taxes. I tell you, our businesses are going to have their taxes raised. They're the ones struggling the most. They're the ones when I'm an auctioneer by trade, and they're the ones when they come and buy. I'll give you an example. I had a gentleman that bust tires at a local tire store. He makes $110, $120 a day, and he gets off work, and he's dirty clothes, and he comes and buys a pie for $100 to help somebody that is that has cancer. And so when you hurt these businesses, and then the businesses themselves are always the one that donate to whatever the interest is, you know, whether it's 4-H, fair, some kind of a community event, and you can only tax these people so much, and then you're going to tax them out of business. And then what are you going to do as a government?
Well, the Gallagher Amendment, of course, kept some balance, if you will, between residential and non-residential property tax.
Mm-hmm.
And it forced the residential assessed valuation percentage down from 29% in our county under 8%. But now that the Gallagher amendment has basically been...
That would be on residential, I believe.
Right, but now the counties are no longer required to keep that that balance between commercial and residential, are they?
I don't know the answer to that question, Mr. Dodd.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your answers so far. They've been very informative, and I really appreciate your candor and the way you are really great transparency, and I want to thank you and commend you for that. We've got another 40 minutes to go here, and this first 49 minutes went awfully quick, and it and it's largely gone fast because your answers have been so concise and appropriate and really transparent. I really have you in high esteem, sir. So I'll join Mike in giving you some kudos there because I really appreciate the way you respond. It's really refreshing for me because here in our town, particularly, we haven't had that kind of transparency, and it's been a challenge. So if we had more county commissioners like you throughout the state, I have no doubt we'd have a greater state in Colorado.
Well, I'm humbled by that. Thank you.
Well, there's one thing I can tell you about Larry, Don, and that is this. If you ask him a question, you're going to get an answer. It may not be the answer you want, but I promise you, you will get an answer. And I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Well,
you know, go ahead, Terry.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm wondering if you're comfortable getting into this question of the possibility of some of the counties in Colorado finding a way to break free from Denver, Boulder, you know, the concentrated urban centers that I personally don't trust the vote in those areas, but We basically, the rural areas of Colorado have fallen under the edict of these population centers, and if you're at all comfortable talking about possibilities of ways of breaking free from that, I'd sure like to talk about it.
I've heard talk about it. I've been at commissioner meetings with multiple commissioners from throughout the state, and they've always called it the teardrop, where it started up there by Laramie County, because the voting base in the state of Colorado is almost virtually surrounded by conservative counties. So it's just that right there, the Denver, Adams County, those counties are the big voting block, and those are the counties that we lost the vote on introduction of WUVs by a little over 1,000 votes, which is going to be devastating to our rural counties.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at you know the whole eastern side of the state is red. Well, mm-hmm. Morgan, Logan, Phillips, Washington, Lincoln, Elbert, El Paso, Douglas,
yes.
Teller, Park, Cheyenne, Kiowa, Kit Carson, all of those counties are red, and they don't really get to decide their own fate because of those population centers. And like you said, Adams, Arapahoe, Jefferson, Denver, Boulder are the worst of it, I believe. You get down to Pueblo and you run into the problem again, and it kind of goes up through the resort areas of the Rockies that are a lot of blue, but the Front Range is other than Pueblo is mostly red, and so it strikes me that a coalition of conservative counties at this point could either consider forming a new state or joining a different state, or, you know, I really want to look at the possibilities of that and see what the inclination is of leadership in those counties to break away from these population centers so that we can at least have a voice that is our own voice rather than being dictated to by these really tyrants. So
the talk that I've heard from the various commissioners is they want to keep the state of Colorado, and then they'll let Denver and those counties, they can have their own different state. So, you know, we don't talk about that as much down here on the Western Slope. We are intermingled with ski counties with ski resorts and colleges that are not in the red. They're that are either in the blue or the purple. So there's not as much talk about that down in this area. I can give you an example, though, of one of the things that Mike touched about earlier, and if there was something that I could change about government, and that would be something called the COG, which is called the Council of Government. And I don't know if you're very familiar with those, but multiple counties usually have what they call the COG. And the COG is you pay this huge membership fee, and if you're all like counties, then you might get along. Well, Montezuma County, in the five counties that we are with, actually there are seven, we are not a member of the COG, because what the COG wants is they hire an executive director for $60,000-$70,000, and then they want to do our county commissioner jobs for us, meaning that if we needed to have a lobbyist at the state of Colorado on a certain bill, that they would go up there. Well, if Montezuma County was a part of the COG in our area, then we would actually have a lobbyist lobbying the exact opposite that we would like them to do. And when DOLA, which is called the Department of Local Affairs, we also have something different here than most other states, is they take the severance tax money and they put it in a pool. And then the way that you get your money back is you have to ask for a grant. So in Montezuma County, it's around $30 million a year. And we get part of that $30 million. I think I can't remember if it's around $7 million. And then we have to beg and plead for $2 million back of the $30 million. And if you are a county that is anti-energy with the current DOLA system, you are allowed to put in for a grant to acquire up to $2 million, which sounds it doesn't make common sense to me, because if you're against energy, then why should you benefit from energy taxes in your county? So there are six criteria, and that would be energy impacts. So Montezuma County usually does fairly well on requesting some of those grants, but that's a program that the government of Colorado has put out there, and to get the money back that was produced in the counties to begin with.
Mike,
very great. Well, that was just a great explanation. And one of the things I was wondering about, Larry Don, I hope you don't mind if I put you on the spot here. You never minded before. So you didn't shoot me. You hadn't shot me yet. So you mentioned a lady commissioner in Well County. I was wondering if I could issue an invitation publicly. Would you do you think it would be possible for you and that lady to come on our program together?
I could try, and I know who the lady that you're talking about. She's one of the best commissioners I've ever met.
Well, that is the reason. In my world, if Larry Don tells me she's probably one of the best, then she's probably better than I thought she was. So, and I thought she was doing a great job, because I'm not sure if you're aware, but my son lives in Greeley.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And he speaks very highly of her and some of the other commissioners there as well. And he has actually been attending their meetings where they have talked about their secession movement. So if you have the opportunity, if there's any way, I would appreciate it. If you have a chance to speak with her, if you too would be willing to come on this program, I know Terry and I would be ecstatic.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll see what I can do for you, Mr. Gaddy.
Well, I appreciate that, buddy. I really do. Because I think at some point in time, you know, and we could get into a very philosophical discussion here, but which is what I consider to be our primary source document in this country. Thomas Jefferson stated very eloquently that the only just government is the government that deals or operates under the consent of those being governed. And,
correct.
But we have a government that is run by the majority. And that it will never come in compliance with the consent of the governed. So if you have consent of the governed, in my opinion, you would have to say that if four or five counties wanted to break off, or if they wanted to say, okay, we want to, if the rest of the counties wanted to separate from the hub in the Denver area, that to me would give them, at least bring them closer to that consent of the governed. And
so I would, yes.
Go ahead.
No, I agree with that, because the reason I brought up the COG is that DOLA a couple of years ago came up with a grant process saying that you had to belong to a COG. It would be divvied up through the COG. And so I actually testified at a Senate committee hearing up at the Capitol in Colorado. And I said, well, if you're going to force Montezuma County to be a member of the COG so that we can get this broadband money, then we want to be a member of one of the counties, of the multiple counties in Utah. And that didn't go over so well, but it was a true statement. It's the way that we felt. We feel that we are more in line with our neighboring Utah counties than we are with our Colorado state government.
Well, the people have more in common, Larry Don, having lived there. The people of Montezuma County have a lot more in common with the neighboring counties in Utah, as you just said, than they do with Denver or Durango, for that matter.
That's correct. In fact, multiple people that are up there at the legislation or legislators, they think we're Cortez, New Mexico. They don't even know we're in the state of Colorado.
So, well, here's my point. This is where I'm going, and again, it's philosophical. But why should a people have to pay for a government they don't want?
I agree.
So, to me, nullification, you know, and I'm not sure, Terry, if you and Larry Don are familiar with the gentleman that France sent to the United States in the 1830s and sent him here because they said he was the most intelligent person in France. And they sent him to the United States to find out about this great experiment in liberty. And so they sent Alexis de Tocqueville. And he, of course, wrote a book after that called On Democracy. And in that, in chapter 15, of course, he wrote it in French. There are translations available in English, of course. But chapter 15 is a very, very good chapter, and it's called The Tyranny of the Majority. And that is one of the best points I've ever read that expounds upon this theory of why, if you've got a tyranny of a majority, and the way I used to bring it up in my classroom when I was teaching was I would count the men and I would count or the women and count the young men. And I would say, okay, how many of you agree that we should live in a democracy? And they'd all raise their hands. And I'd say, okay, well, there's 12 women and there's 15 guys. So the 15 guys say, well, they're going to vote. They would be the majority and they want to be allowed to have sexual liberty with all the females. You females going to go along with that democracy?
Very good.
So it's there is a tyranny in the majority because the majority can make the minority pay for what they want, and that is one that is my greatest objection to a government. And I believe that people should be able to vote with their feet And if Colorado said, okay, well, we've got these four or five counties and we're going to basically have a rural type government, we're going to rule for the people who are like us, most like us every day. So if that was true and there were people in the other part of the state, say, lived in Denver and say, hey, I want some of that, so they could say, well, if you want some of that, move here. You know, I realize there would even be issues with that, but at some point in time, we have to get to the point to where people have the government that they are willing to pay for.
I agree wholeheartedly.
And there's a good segue right there, Mike, to the fact that, well, it's like Patrick Henry stated, I believe it was he that stated, fear is the passion of slaves. We are definitely in a spiritual battle, and it's easy to tell which side of that battle you're on, whether you know it or not, by the level of fear that dictates your daily routine. And these blue counties, these heavy population-centered counties and resort areas where a lot of people come in from out of state with a lot of money, et cetera, they really are, their lives are controlled by their level of fear.
Well, Terry, we can get into this philosophical. We could go philosophically with this, and I've said this on several times. Governments rule with the two Fs. It's either fear or force. If the government cannot make you afraid enough to put on a mask or to social distance, if they cannot make you afraid enough to do that, then they will force you to do that. So it's the two F system of government, and that is totally contrary to absolutely, that's 180 degrees out of phase from what the Declaration of Independence stated.
And that is what we are experiencing today.
Exactly. It's either fear or force. Okay, if we can't make you so afraid, you know, I got a funny look from one of my neighbors the other day. He said, well, he said, if all hell breaks loose and a shooting war starts, how are you going to know who to shoot? And I said, ah, just like the old West, I shoot everybody with a mask on.
What did he say after that?
He kind of mumbled and walked off, so I'm not really sure.
Well,
I feel for my neighbors. Go ahead.
I just wanted to open it up to you, Larry Don, to take this conversation in the last 15 minutes or so here, whatever direction you would like. So go ahead.
I'll talk about the COVID a little bit. I've seen the waste with the CARES Act that you wouldn't believe. Montezuma County received $1.3 million. And you had people trying to figure out a way how to work the system to spend that $1.3 million. Montezuma County did not need that $1.3 million. Montezuma County just needed to go on as normal, and our businesses needed to not have any stipulations on them, and we would have been just fine. And if I, at a local level, I see the kind of waste with $1.3 million, I can't believe a county that has over $500,000 or $600,000 that received, you know, $100 and some million, what type of waste that there is on that money. You know, I seen it here where they wanted us to build a $300,000 hospital because we had one person die of overdosing on alcohol. And thank gosh we had a little common sense and we didn't have that fear, or it would have been $300,000 of taxpayer money wasted. I don't like the way that our health departments are exerting their control over county commissioners. And to be honest with you, thank gosh, Montezuma County is the Board of Health is the Montezuma County Commissioners. And if a year ago, if we would, at the direction of our current health director and our doctor, They wanted to take our board away before COVID ever took place, and they wanted us to give that authority over to a board of seven people. And if that would have happened, your moms and the commissioners, we declined the offer. And if we would have taken the bait, then Montezuma County would have had their hands tied, the county commissioners and the authority, because right now the county commissioners are the Board of Health. And if we don't like what our Board of Health is doing, we can have that position terminated and put somebody in that position that we feel is more like-minded with the people that live in Montezuma County. So many things have happened as a county commissioner. I know that they had the Gunnison sage grouse, and one of the things that we did on the advice of a commissioner out of Utah, this was almost 7 years ago, because of a mouse situation there, is we made a law, an ordinance that invasive species had to go through the county commission before they could be enacted or brought to our county. And we had people call and saying, well, you know, what if I want a zebra? We were like, we don't care if you have a zebra. We don't want the federal government to put those stipulations on us with if you have designated sage grouse habitat. And lo and behold, when they finally made the map for where the Gunnison sage grouse habitat was, it stopped at our county line. So that was one that we were very proud of.
Well,
very much
Larry
so.
Don, let me, I know we've got a little bit of time left, but the one thing I really wanted to take the opportunity in case we get down close and I don't have the opportunity was to tell you how much we appreciate you giving us and the listeners an insight into what government is like from the other side, and not only to give us that insight, but to give us an honest insight. And that was the reason I wanted you to do it, because I knew that's exactly what we would get. And I thank you for your candidness and your openness. And I thank you with my fellow friends back there for the 8 years of service you gave to the county.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate that. I just feel fortunate that I was able to serve my neighbors and friends.
Well, and, you know, like you said when we were talking beforehand, I think it was my grandfather who told me, he said, don't worry, son, somebody will always bitch. He said, hell, they'd bitch if you hung them with a new rope. So,
I remember a lot of your stories, Mr. Gaddy.
So
you've got some good ones.
Quit calling me Mister. You make me feel old.
Okay. All right, Mike.
But it's an insight I think that most people don't have, especially in the battles that are carried on. And if there has to be government, I don't care for state government. I don't care for the federal government. I sure don't federal government. I don't think we should have a federal government, but, if we have to have a government, it has to be local, and that is why, you know, I appreciate what you've done and your willingness to open up and talk to us about this tonight. You got any other questions?
A lot of
there,
things
Carol?
I see in government is people are building their resume to do something else. And to give you an example, in our city right now, of Cortez would not open our swimming pools. They wouldn't open the rec center. They wouldn't take care of the weeds and the sidewalks. And they told the community that they were broke because of the pandemic. They forgot to tell the community that they had $9 million in reserves. So if you was the budget director of the city of Cortez and you was trying to find you a job somewhere else, that was your plan all along. And the more money that you showed of taxpayer money in reserves that didn't go to services, you might think that you might have a better opportunity to get a better job. And if there's one thing that makes me sick to my stomach is these people that govern by doing things that are for themselves instead of for the people that they represent. And I have seen that in 8 years, time and time again. And if there's one thing I could change about government, is those kind of things going away. It's just, it's sad when you don't truth about that you tell everybody you're broke when you're not. Or anyway.
Well, a question. I've got you created another question in my mind. To the people out there who cherish their rightful liberty and cherish their freedom, who is, in from your 8 years of experience, who is the more dangerous entity, the elected officials or the appointed officials?
Appointed.
And you have given us a couple of instances of that where you talked about like the board that they wanted to offer the county said, okay, let's take this out of the hands of you three people who were elected to office. Let's take that out of your hands and put it into the hands of people who are appointed, who are responsible to no one. Would that be a proper assessment?
That would be spot on, Mike.
So we are dealing with the bureaucracy, at least with the elected people, they are accountable. And since you're term limited and you're finishing out your 8 years, let me ask you a question. How do you feel about term limits, good or bad?
I like term limits. They're good. I just wish that we had term limits in Congress, and I wish we had term limits in the Senate. I think 12 years, to be honest, 8 years I had, I think as a county commissioner, and this is my personal opinion, 12 years, the knowledge that I had, I think 4 years I could have got a lot more accomplished. I think that the congressman should serve 12 years, and I think senators should serve. Congressmen should, I wish they was to change that to 3-4 year terms for congressmen, and the Senate 2 6-year terms. So I am for term limits.
Okay. Thank you for that answer. Any questions, Terry?
Well, we're kind of winding down to the last 9 minutes here.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward. I really hope that you are able to get a hold of your lady associate up in Weld County, and we can get you back here where we can talk about what they're doing and maybe some possibilities. You don't want to your hand too much, but I'd like to have some private conversation with you too also.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what I can do on that. You know, another note on the COVID, this is just devastating our kids, and it isn't right for grown people to act like children, and the way that what they're doing to our children is just wrong. And it eats on me. I have a 15-year-old daughter. I can tell you instance after instance of what is so. They're giving them eight hours of schoolwork like they were in school and expect these kids to do it. All of these kids are falling off on their grades. Zoom does not work for every child, and I'm very disappointed in teachers and superintendents that advocate to keep the children out of schools. If there would be one thing that
teaching, they're
is a travesty
teaching them,
besides our businesses. Go ahead.
They're teaching them to operate from a position of fear and to succumb to the force. The two Fs that Mike mentioned, they're being conditioned to that now. And mm-hmm. They're also being dumbed down by the lack of oxygen. if they are kids can't metabolize things the way that adults can, and to force small children to be wearing a mask and cut the percentage of oxygen, they're not even meeting OSHA requirements. OSHA requires a 19.5% oxygen content in your air in your work environment. And when they put on these masks, it brings the oxygen level down to at least 17.5, and in some cases lower than that. It's criminal what they're doing. It's literally
criminal. And so I'll give you an example for what we do is as soon as they close them to where they – as soon as they kick them out of school and put them back into the homes, you have – large groups of kids that go to parents' house and different mothers or fathers take turns. They're still meeting. They're not wearing a mask and they're not getting as much work done, but they're still having the kids meet. And one of the safest places is for those kids to be in that school.
Well, gentlemen, I will tell you a story. It breaks my heart, but, our grandson is going to this online school by Zoom or whatever you call it. And he was going to that school, and he's in the fourth grade, and they had a young man, I think he was fifth or sixth grade, within the past 2 weeks who actually committed suicide in the classroom.
In the classroom.
That is heartbreaking.
And it's this isolation, and Terry, you and I have talked about this. What we have done to the old people in nursing homes is absolutely criminal.
They're
that
dying at a higher
I have
rate.
A grandmother in the nursing homes.
I'm sorry,
they're
Larry.
Dying at a higher rate, and they're gonna force this vaccine on those people too.
Oh, yes, because they're going to use them for guinea pigs. Larry, Don, you mentioned you have a family member in a nursing home.
Well, I have a grandmother in a nursing home, and I'm sure that she would rather be able to see her immediate family daily than to be isolated away from her family and take her chances on getting COVID or not. That it would be more important to see her family at 80 some years old than it would be to be isolated.
Well, I've actually heard that from people as well. I know a gentleman in Arkansas who owns several nursing homes, and he said that the people have told him, I would rather take a chance on getting COVID and at least getting to see my loved ones on a regular basis.
Yep.
Well, my wife works in an elderly care facility, and they have multiple levels of care, including memory care. And what they're seeing is that so many of them went down, not just from the isolation, but after they gave them flu shots. And the rate of them dying has increased this year over last year. And they're seeing patients come in or residents come in that have been tested positive and have symptoms that are being brought in from hospitals. It's criminal.
What opened my eyes was the first positive case in Montezuma County was my sister-in-law. They quarantined her. She's a triage nurse in La Plata County at Mercy Hospital. And they quarantined her for 14 days with her husband and her child. And the child and the husband, they didn't do anything different than their normal lifestyle. And the husband and the child never got sick. 14 days later, she went back to work. And she's been working as a triage nurse ever since. And that was in March.
Yep. Should be a lesson in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. She had a temperature of 99 degrees for one day, and then she said other than that, she felt normal.
we got about 2 minutes, Larry. If there's anything you'd like to say before we go.
I thank you, gentlemen, for letting me participate in this conversation tonight. I hope that that we can start getting some people to use common sense. I hope that they quit treating us like adults, keep acting like children, and adults keep trying to make treat adults as children. And I just want to get back to normal. I want to get our kids back in the schools. I want our businesses to thrive on their own merit. They just take personal responsibility. And if the government, federal government, keeps going like they're going with this COVID situation, they're going to destroy this whole country, in my opinion. The mandatory mask mandate for a cowboy out on working out on a ranch where the nearest person is 30 miles away is absolutely ridiculous. And it's absolutely ridiculous to close gyms. And I'm tired of people that are unhealthy telling people that are trying to be healthy what's best for them by sitting at home and not going to their gym. So that's my two cents.
Well, thank you, supply lines are broken, and they're broken globally. And if people here haven't felt the pain of that at the maximum level yet, they're going to. We've created a global depression out of fear, and that was unjustified fear. So I totally share your thoughts. I appreciate the way you approach things from a common law perspective of where there's no victim, there's no crime kind of approach, and that's the way I like to think. So I really, really appreciate you a lot, Larry. Thanks so much for coming on here. Mike, final comment.
I can't thank you enough, Larry, Don. Miss having more closer conversations with you. I hope you and your family are well. And, again, if you can talk with that lady in Weld County, if we can put something together, I would certainly be appreciative. But thank you so much.
Thank you, and I will see what I can get done.
Be blessed.
All right.
And be safe. And
we'll
be in touch. Thank you so much for everyone for listening tonight. We'll be back next Thursday night with Handling the Truth with the Rebel Madman, Mike Gaddy, and Tenacity, myself, Terry Dodd. Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
To your government walls, all of you, you dadgum government, you sorry rat with crutches, you got yourself an itch and you're wanting me to scratch it, well you dadgum government, uh-huh, oh don't you know, oh don't you love me sometimes, hey boy. Of a shoe fitting fire starting. Ought to tell you no good preambulatory bone frame and nail it to your government walls. All of you, you dadgum government, you sorry so and so's. You got your damn hands in every pocket of my clothes. Will you dadgum?